Good morning and welcome to our Windermere Candidates Forum here at 94.7 The Pulse. Windermere has the lowest population of any of the wards. It also has the biggest land area and the highest number of councillors per head of the population. Here to answer your questions today, we've got Anthony Aitken, David Withington, Robert Blazcheck, Marina Kozel, Bronwyn Baker, and we were going to have Montash, I'm not sure where he's got to, and also Ken Dickens. Please welcome our panel. So up to two people sitting here today could be the next ward councillor for Windermere. According to our election calculator at mitchellsfrontpage.com, to get elected they'll need to get 10,854 votes, or just over 33%, either in their own right or from the other candidates through preferences. The people we have here today are six of the 11 candidates, and if Moshtag joins us, hopefully seven. We have received apologies from Jordan Grossman and Kylie Grisbeck, who couldn't make it today. The forum is being broadcast live on 94.7 FM. We're streaming live at 947thepulse.com, and our podcast will go up at 947thepulse.com and mitchellsfrontpage.com after the forum. To those in the audience and also listening at home, you can join in the conversation and ask a question of the candidates. I've got to interview a lot of these candidates already. So the questions aren't mine. It's an opportunity for the audience to ask their questions. If you want to do that, you can join the conversation on Twitter. Just use the hashtag Windermere and your tweets will go up on our screen there. You can also send in questions to mitchellsfrontpage.com/ask. And if you're in the audience and want to ask a question, we've got a wireless microphone. We can get that over to you. Just put your hand up and let Liam know that you would like to ask a question. So the format, how will it work? The format is that each candidate will get a closing and opening statement. So we'll start with a round of opening statements. We'll then do questions and then closing statements. The length of statements and also question answers is going to be capped at 2 minutes, it is. So that means Liam, our timekeeper here, is going to ring the bell once when 90 seconds has elapsed, then twice when 2 minutes has elapsed. So when you hear the bell ringing once, that's a reminder you've got 30 seconds to go in terms of your time. We've had a lot of questions that have come through. We've got a lot of candidates here, so probably not going to be able to get to all of the questions, but that 2 minutes is sort of a limit, not a challenge. So if you keep the answers short, then we can get to more questions. To be fair to each candidate, the speaking order for statements and questions will be constantly shuffled. The order will display up on the screen there. This is what it looks like when we shuffle the names around. So the computer will randomly determine the order for each question and each statement. So let's move now to our opening statements for today's forum. We'll do one more shuffle. And listed first is Bronwyn Baker from the Animal Justice Party.
Thanks, Mitchell, and thanks everyone for listening in. And yeah, as you pointed out, I am with the Animal Justice Party. I'm also a long-term local to the Geelong region. I was born here, raised a family here, and lived and worked here most of my life. I'm standing for election to council because we need a council that's transparent and accountable as well as progressive. We need a team of councillors who are committed to working together and as a team, not just with each other, but also with the community, and also to work to a long-term consistent plan. This is something Geelong hasn't had for a long time, if ever, and it's really let our city down in the past. Recently, our community has produced an exciting blueprint for a clever and creative future, and I'm 100% committed to and capable of working towards this. And I'll also be a strong voice for the people of Windermere. This region deserves a lot more attention from the city than it has had to date. City funds we've seen poured into other areas, while the northern suburbs and outlying townships in particular have missed out even on the basics. And of course, as an Animal Justice Party representative, I'll stand up for our much-loved animal companions. Council takes $6 million every single year in pet registration fees. Most people who pay these fees don't realise that Council fails to provide any financial support to the Geelong Animal Welfare Society. GAWS is running at a huge loss, going further into debt every year, while Council, its biggest customer, stands by and lets it happen. What's going to happen to our lost and displaced cats and dogs when GAWS is gone? What's more, Geelong has for the third year in a row recorded the highest number of cases of animal cruelty per capita anywhere in the state. This is disgraceful. Is this the label we want? Do we want to be known as Victoria's most cruel region? Council needs to address this and reverse it as a priority. We need more funding for our animal compliance office, for GAWS. We need subsidised desexing so that's accessible and affordable for everybody all the time. And I think I'm running out of time, so I'd better wind up.
Thank you very much. Very good timing there. We'll go over to David Withington.
Thanks very much, Mitchell. I want to spend this 2 minutes just introducing myself a little bit and addressing the unique circumstances in which this election is held. This is no ordinary election, and it's a critically important election for Geelong. Coming in after a period of administration, this is going to be a very, very tough job that all the people along this desk are applying for. It's going to be a council under the microscope. We've got a state government who clearly doesn't trust the council to perform, as indicated by the appointment of monitors. We've got the situation next year of a state election and the party politics that will play around that. I suspect there are even people from a party political viewpoint who wouldn't mind the council failing next year. In those circumstances, I decided to put my hand up. I wouldn't normally have done that, but I could see the unique challenge that faced the city. I'm in my late 60s. I've had a wealth of experience at the highest levels of both state government and local government, and also in the private sector, working with both state and local government over a very long period of time. I believe I'm the sort of person that's going to be absolutely essential if this new council is to succeed. In particular, my skills and experience will also benefit Windermere Ward, because Windermere Ward has not fared well with only two councillors out of the 11 to be elected, and will need someone, two people hopefully, with plenty of experience and know-how to hit the ground running and start to get a fairer deal for Windermere Ward, which has been disadvantaged in the past. So that's why I'm standing.
Thank you. And Anthony Aitken.
Good morning, Mitchell. Good morning, listeners. Look, I'm actually going to continue on the theme of David as well too, because I actually think the candidates that want to be councillors need to talk about their skills and experiences that they can bring to the role, because all of us have been listening to the community in the north, and they've made it quite clear to us that they do feel neglected and they do want a back-to-basics agenda from their councillors if they are elected. So what we need to concentrate on is look at who are those people that have the skills and experiences to make us at Windermere to get the resources and get the attention that is needed out into the northern suburbs and into the rural community. I'll just highlight some of my particular skills. I'm a CPA. I'm a member of the Certified Practicing Accountants. I'm a member of the Australian Institute of Company Directors. I have a Bachelor of Commerce degree from Deakin University. I have a Masters of Accounting from Central Queensland University. I served on the Shire of Corio in 1992-93, and I served on the inaugural council of the City of Greater Geelong in 1995 to 2001. I haven't been involved in local government for over 16 years now, and I'm so disappointed about what I see in terms of the council and local government now. And that has given me the motivation to want to come back and actually serve my community and be a representative for the Geelong community. We need councillors that do have skills and experiences that can deliver and deliver results. We cannot have councillors that just talk. We've actually had that period now where councillors talk a lot, but they don't deliver. And it's up to the community to be able to decide which candidates have the ability to be able to deliver and give results to the community. And I think with the experiences and the skills that I have, that I'm an excellent candidate. Now, you do get the opportunity to vote for two candidates, and I would like to be considered as one of those. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert Blaschik.
Thank you, Mitchell, and thank you for the Pulse team for having me here. I'm Robert Blaschik. I'm young, I'm full of energy and ready to continue building on from where our parents and grandparents have left off. It's time. It's time for a new generation of leaders. It's time for City Hall to hear us in Windermere and know that we aren't going to be left behind. Our community needs a fighter, someone with the knowledge and proven experience to take the voice of our community onto council. I'm a recent graduate of Deakin University with a Bachelor of Arts and Bachelor of Commerce. I've begun a career in the financial services sector. I went to North Geelong Secondary College, and I grew up in the Department of Housing Home, so I understand the struggles we face. Although I have never let these circumstances bring me down, I've contributed to my community throughout City of Greater Geelong in a wide variety of roles, including volunteering for young people in our city. because we all should contribute to our community regardless of us being a councillor or not. At university, I fought for services to increase the opportunity for further education for all members of our community, including students from disadvantaged and culturally diverse backgrounds. I'm driven to ensure that the community continues to grow, develop and becomes the best it can be. I've been educated locally, employed locally, live locally and supports local. I want to be your voice. I believe that with my experience, I could represent our community in its best interest. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Anne-Marie Kozel.
Good morning, everyone. So I'm an independent candidate and I'm standing to provide strong and practical leadership for the Windermere Ward. I'm definitely 100, if not 200%, if not more, behind the Clever and Creative Futures document. In fact, my 9 positive starting goals are essentially taken from there. What I'm trying to do is give back to where I've come from. I grew up in Lara. I'm a child of migrants, came here when I was 4. And since growing up in Lara, being part of the swimming and being part of the athletics and also attending Matthew Flinders Girls Secondary College, not just as a student, but also as college captain in my final years, I then started to expand my horizons and want to start looking at how do you build a city. Enrolling at Deakin University in both architecture and construction management, it gave me the backbone to actually be a registered architect and also be an open licensed builder. I certainly am a very, very resourceful person. I know when I need to get something and I know how to get it. I'm here because it's finally time. If I was to wait another 3 years, it would be a waste of time. What I want to bring to the table is someone who really will implement, someone who will actually cut to the chase and take out all that stuff that's under the rug. There's a big problem in this area in, I believe, a low self-esteem. One thing that we have to do is we have to gather our resources and we have to pull and connect the region back together and stop trying to spread ourselves so thinly. I'm not necessarily saying that Windermere has missed out, but I'm certainly saying that we need to combine our forces and bring a much stronger picture together. I'm a person and generation, like many others, who needs communication and I need contact. So transport and connectivity are huge factors for me. I see a huge siphon of energy and resources leaving Geelong daily, whether it's a trade or whether it's a white-collar person heading out to Melbourne. What I want to do is I want to bring back the thickness and the juiciness and the richness to this region, which gave me so much. Being back here at the Pulse is an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much. And Ken Dickens.
Thank you, Mitchell. Good morning, listeners. I'm going to preface what I'm about to say by saying this isn't about me. This is about the people in the northern area in Windermere. And in my travels, I've noticed how diverse and how different Windermere is from most other wards. In the northern area, you've got farming. Not many people, not a large population, and they're concerned about encroachment. In Anarchy, you've got a farming and a small rural community that's concerned about potholes in their roads and a school crossing upgrade and street lighting. In Lara, you've got population growth that is likely to take the population from around 15,000 to 30,000 by 2030. There's 140 train movements per day. There's traffic issues and trucks diverted through the town. There needs an overpass or an underpass at the railway line, and eco-tourism, Yuyang's and Serendip Sanctuary are high priorities for the people in Lara. They want the tourist dollar. In Batesford, you've got the Vic Roads bypass and other issues that need addressing. Then we go to Corio and Nor Lane. There's disadvantage at a multi-generational level. There's a systemic lack of infrastructure, and in fact, I consider it an infrastructure wasteland. They've got a hospital that was meant to be up and running that was announced with great fanfare some 18 months ago, and it was meant to be completed in 2017, and they haven't turned a sod. People have to travel to Belmont for dialysis, as an example. Northern Arc is proposed to be built over 15 years, which just isn't good enough. Many community organisations are working with minimal support but doing a fantastic job. So in essence, what the North needs, what Windermere needs, is somebody that can advocate on their behalf. And I truly believe that I can do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ken.
Well, we'll move over to questions now. And as I said, these questions come from our audience because I've already had the opportunity to interview many of the candidates here today. If you're live in the audience, just let Liam know that you'd like to ask a question. He'll get the roving microphone over to you. In the meantime, we'll go to the many questions which have come through our website, mitchellsfrontpage.com/ask. As I said, we've probably got more questions than we can realistically get to. Our first question comes from Joyce. And she says, the North has suffered from major disadvantage and poor infrastructure for many years. Many things have been promised but never delivered. What is your plan to address this? And listed first is David Withington.
Thank you, Mitchell. That's a very good question. And it goes to the heart of the challenge that is facing us in standing for council. The North certainly has missed out in the past, and the next term of council has to be about ensuring that the North gets a much fairer go than it has had in the past. The council will not re-establish its reputation and get back the confidence and trust of the Geelong people unless it can start to redress this inequality and disadvantage that has grown over so many years. And that has to start in the North of Geelong. So I'm sure I, and I'm happy to concede everyone on this panel and everyone standing for election, will be absolutely committed to being a champion for the North. The question is not whether we have the right sentiment. The question is whether we will get the job done and get results. And that's where I believe my long experience in campaigning, all forms of government and in relations with government, I will be hitting the ground running and I will be focused on getting results from day one.
Ken Dickens.
Advocate. It's a matter of advocate. It's a matter of selling your message to the rest of the councillors. Whatever happens, there's going to need to be six councillors that vote for any future development in the North. And it's that person that can convince the six councillors that the North needs probably, not probably, definitely more than the other wards is where the strength of the person or the two people that lie in the council.
And Robert Blazcheck.
I think at the end of the day, we need an advocate, somebody who's willing to roll up their sleeves, willing to talk to every single councillor in City Hall, and to convince them that we in the Windermere ward do need a little bit more infrastructure, a little bit more funding, and a little bit more help. So it's paramount to network, it's paramount to get involved and convince everybody and actually create a infrastructure plan for the Windermere ward.
Marina Kozel?
Whilst I know that we need infrastructure, I'm also a massive advocate for social sustainability. The facilities are there. As a person with background in construction and seeing that, you know, buildings are the background to our daily activity, what I see a lot of is some failed basic services that don't need buildings, don't need walls. What they need are ham and cheese sandwiches, or they need a place where someone can actually get counselling. There's much of that that can already be rolled out. It's just not being rolled out from the human services part as well.
Bronwyn Baker?
Yeah, well, as the other guys have already said, we really just need a strong advocate to get in there. I think every one of us has the same sentiment, as I think it was David that said. And with regard to experience, I know the guys up there and there were talking about their experience. No, I've never been on council. I don't have a string of degrees and I don't run a business, but I work in a really professional job that revolves around decision-making, team leadership, financial decisions, influence and negotiation, stakeholder management, and generally engaging people. I have outstanding communication skills, and I think I'd be the right person to engage with not only the other councillors, but also community groups as well. But yes, the North definitely needs a lot more attention than it's had to date.
Anthony Aitken.
Thank you. And I think the question was from Joyce, is that right? Joyce, I hope you're listening. Look, the clever and creative document that Council has developed with the community actually says that disadvantage in the northern areas has to be addressed if the community is going to succeed for the future. And that's how you actually deliver infrastructure. You actually do what the council's policy document says. It says deliver infrastructure to the disadvantaged areas of Geelong. And the most disadvantaged areas of Geelong just happen to be in the north and also in Whittington. And that document that we've all said we've supported tells us what to do, but unfortunately, infrastructure is being allocated on a political basis instead of on a needs basis. And that is, it's being concentrated into the CBD instead of put into the northern suburbs and into the Whittington areas of Geelong. So if the council, the administration and all of us as potential candidates are committed to the clever and creative document, what we need to do is actually implement what it says, and that is put infrastructure into the north.
Thank you very much. And our next question is actually about that document. It comes in email form from Vicky, and she says, there were 9 community aspirations underpinning the City of Greater Geelong, a clever and creative future vision. And she's even been kind enough to write out all 9. She says, which is the most important to you? Why? If elected, how will you work to achieve that goal? So to run through what the 9 are, the first is a prosperous economy. Second is a leader in developing and adapting technology. Creativity drives culture is 3. A fast, reliable and connected public transport network. A destination that attracts local and international visitors. People feel safe wherever they are. An inclusive, diverse and healthy, socially connected community. Sustainable development that supports population growth and protects the natural environment. Development and implementation of sustainable solutions. So they're the 9. Vicky wants to know which is the most important and how you wish to go about implementing that. And listed first is Ken Dickens.
I think social disadvantage is the biggest single issue. Unless we deal with intergenerational disadvantage in a way that produces outcomes where people can get work, as an example, where as a business we're committed to the Grow Compact with G21. 40% of our employees are employed within the Corio and Norlane suburbs, or the 3214 suburbs, unless that's dealt with, we're a little bit broken. As a community, it's critical, and Whittington as well, and Newcombe, it's critical that we deal with the issues of social inequality. And that is my main priority, and I think anything below that doesn't do the community any justice at all.
Bronwyn Baker?
All of those, obviously all 9 of those things are really important and they're all going to depend upon each other. But inclusive, diverse, healthy, and that goes back once again to what Ken's saying about the inequality needing to be addressed, the inequity that's across Geelong. Employment, huge issue out in the north. And yes, G21 has that Grow program going, but all those things we need to work really hard at.
And Robert Blazczyk?
Like you can all see, I've actually brought the Clever and Creative Future booklet with me. I think the most important, one of the most important aspects out of those 9 is an inclusive, diverse, healthy and socially connected community. And I say that because once all our citizens and all our community members are happy and they're living in a engaged and diverse and inclusive community, we'll start seeing things go forward, start seeing things grow, start seeing businesses helping out, because we've just got a positive attitude in the community. And I think that's a key point I believe in.
Marina Kurz.
As they say, education smashes poverty, and the biggest problem that we have also is a lack of life skills and lack of skills, which then feeds into the intergenerational problem and the lower employment rates that we see here, and people are literally stuck. They don't know what to do with themselves. So what I'm going to say is the top one, a prosperous economy that supports jobs and education opportunities. If you don't give people the channel to step out and pursue, or as they call it in the life coaching sector, they call it the urge to merge. If you don't give someone the opportunity to merge with what they have an urge to kind of help out in the next generation of community, then we're all wasting our time here, because we need to build the next layer.
David Withington.
Sorry, Mitchell, I had to go out and have a cough. I didn't hear the question.
Do you want me to run through the question?
No,
again?
No, please don't. I take it we're talking about the 9 main goals in the Clever and Creative Vision. And what I'd like to say about that is the most important issue for me particularly in the north, where there's where we're starting a long way behind, and where so many jobs have been lost, is a much stronger effort from the council in the area of economic development and jobs growth. We have to find jobs for some of the people who've been left behind out in the north. Otherwise, inequality will continue to be a major problem and will undermine the clever and creative vision. So the main focus that I would take out of that particular document is that if we don't start to redress the economic disadvantage in the north and provide jobs for particularly some of the lower skilled people that have found themselves out of work and find ways to train them better to get into work, then I don't think the rest of it can succeed.
And Anthony Aitken.
Thanks, Mitchell. Look, I actually agree with what all the candidates have said. What I do want to introduce is that they're all aspirational. And what will happen if we don't get the basics right as the city of Greater Geelong, it doesn't matter how many aspirations you have, whether you have 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, or 7, or 9. And the basics are council does need to fix potholes, council does need to collect waste, council does need to introduce a hard waste collection system, and council does need to address that we're overcapitalising community infrastructure in the CBD. That capital, if it is available, does need to go into the outlying areas of Geelong. And that is how we're going to be able to meet all those aspirations if we can get the basics right.
Thank you very much. This is a question that's come through from Russell, and it's about council service delivery. And he says, council are promoting that they provide 126 services. Would you consider undertaking a review of all of these services? Should this be done before the decision is made on staffing levels and reorganisation or realigning the organisation? Would you agree that both of the above steps need to be done before the brief is written for the decision on the new amalgamated administration and city hall premises? So 126 services. Listed first is Bronwyn Baker.
About 10 questions in there. as far as the services go, I think it does need review. Anthony mentioned hard rubbish. Now, that's a standard service in most local areas. Not Geelong. We don't have a hard rubbish collection. So I guess I would just say, yes, it does need to be reviewed. And I'm sorry, I didn't catch the rest of the question. There seemed to be quite a few in there, but I'll leave it there for now.
Marina Kozel?
Yes, definitely they need to be reviewed. However, just living in different parts of Australia, I've seen better ways of doing the basics that council should do. We're talking about technology, we're talking about communication, apps, just making the whole thing run a lot smoother. Definitely needs to be reviewed.
Anthony Aitken.
Look, I've been waiting for this question because this is actually the area where the administrators have let the community of Geelong down. They actually haven't addressed the financial sustainability of the organisation. The council's a $400 million company, and it has rate capping, which means that it can only increase its rates by a maximum of 2% per year. In the first year of the administrators, they actually increased employee costs by 5.13%. And you know what they also did? They've got 32 senior managers that are earning over $140,000 per year. And you know what else? The 8 senior executives of the City of Greater Geelong are currently earning about $2.9 million between the 8 of them. So that's $340,000. So guess what? There is quite a lot of review that needs to be undertaken and fix the sustainability of the council. You cannot increase your employee costs each year by over 5% when your main income stream is capped at 2%. This is a major challenge for the councillors of the future and also for these candidates here to actually understand that. And we will have to put a significant amount of work in once we're elected. I'm actually feared that it may actually be a repeat of history that happened after the last time that administrators were put in place. And I remind people what happened then. The CEO had to be sacked. The organisation had to retrench up to 200 staff people because the administrators didn't address the financial sustainability of the organisation.
Thank you very much. Robert Blazcheck.
I believe a new incoming council to City Hall and to the City of Greater Geelong, they should have the right to review. I think any services are essential and they play an essential part to whichever respective community. So we have to be careful and be really precise and take our time in reviewing these services. But I absolutely do believe that the new incoming council and councillors should review. They should look at a more sustainable plan. They should also look at the way everything's structured. Some of the other candidates have mentioned a better plan for us members of the community, a hard waste, a better rates plan. Yes, I do understand that our rates are capped at 2%. So where they're getting the funds, that's a good question. We all need to look into that. But I'll also be wary of employees. I wouldn't be retrenching them and letting them go. I think we need to be very smart in the way we go about reviewing it.
David Withington?
Yes, well, this is a very, very important question. I'm not in favour of too many more reviews. God, we've had a lot of reviews in Geelong, and God, we've got a lot of reports on the outcomes of those reviews. What we actually need is some action to put into effect what some of those reviews have said. This was all done by the previous council before it was sacked. There was quite an extensive report at huge costs, many hundreds of thousands of dollars, done into the financial sustainability of the council, all sorts of recommendations in it, and what was done with it? Very, very little. We've got a lot of the information. 126 services is a lot. There does need to be a focus on the basic services. That is the only way we will get people's confidence and trust back in the council. It's absolutely ridiculous that the council can't find a way to do a hard waste collection when other municipalities can do it. That's what the people in the north talk about. That's why they're angry and cynical about the council. We need to start to work out what are the essential services and what are the less important services. And we certainly need a council that's prepared to look at what plans are on the books and actually make them happen. For example, the council, before it was sacked, introduced a social infrastructure plan. Surely that social infrastructure plan must have talked about the future of Geelong's libraries, but what happens? The administrators come in and start to close the libraries. If that was in the plan, it was actually the previous council that said it should happen. If it wasn't in the plan, why was it now happening? They were meant to be following the plan. That's my point. We need to get on and start some action.
Ken Dickens.
I have an open mind about the number of services that are delivered by the City of Greater Geelong. I'm not too sure what all of them are. But I'm all for benchmarking. I think what's happened with Geelong over, since amalgamation, and the message I get from a lot of people is that prior to amalgamation, councils were easier to deal with. They got things done, potholes were fixed, grass were cut, rubbish was picked up. And since amalgamation, there's just been this massive disconnect between the council and the people that pay for council. So in answer to several questions that person asked is, A, does a review need to be done? Definitely. B, I think it should be based on an outcome or outcomes, and that should be benchmarking to the best councils in Australia. We talk about aspirational 30-year visions, which I think is fantastic, but the reality is, unless we have a functioning council that can provide the services in a timely manner to the people that demand them, we're kidding ourselves. And, you know, roads, rates and rubbish, even though some in the council believe that the council's more nuanced, more sophisticated than those three R's, I think the back to basics philosophy is a good one. I'm not concerned about, overly concerned, I should say, about the right people being paid big money. I have no problem with that. If the outcome results and the right people in the right job could make a massive difference to the service delivery of the Geelong Council.
And just in a follow-up to that question, I've got another one about the privatisation of services. It says, do any of the candidates believe that the council are either going to or should privatise council services? Anthony Aitken.
Well, I actually was introduced to privatisation through Jeff Kennett, called CCT, and what it did do was it forced the council to actually review its service delivery and actually look at how it could get the best return for the services that they were actually undertaking. the simply privatising for the sake of privatising isn't the right approach in any business or government organisation. What is important is to actually have a look at the service that's being delivered and whether it is needed and whether it is required and how much subsidy is being put into it. A good example is our pools lose money, but we now come up with a system where it's $8 to get into one of the swimming pools into the Geelong region. And it's just too costly. That's a luxury $8, especially for people that live around Norlane Waterworld. And what I would like to look at is increasing the volume of customers that are actually using the facility so that you can reduce your prices. To me, that's what privatisation means. It actually means having a business approach to the manner in which you deliver certain services and activities in the community. And I, for one, would love to increase the volume of people, especially in the north, that are using Norlane Waterworld. And the best chance that we've got of doing that is what I call disadvantaged pricing and not the homogenous pricing that the City of Greater Geelong has at the present time. Homogeneous pricing is where they have one price for entry for every single facility that they have under their control. Disadvantaged pricing is where you actually look at the market at which that service is being operated and you establish a pricing which is based on the capacity of the market and the people to pay. And that's certainly what I'll be doing if I'm elected as a councillor.
David Withington.
Well, I haven't got an ideological position on that, Mitchell. I think it's a case of looking at each service, each requirement as on its merits and making the decision on what's the most efficient and effective way to provide that service. There's certainly some areas where that may well be by contracting it out to the private sector. There are other areas where councils clearly got a social responsibility and there's a level of subsidy involved where the service is better provided in-house. I don't have a fixed position on that. I think it's a case of looking at each particular case on its merits.
Bronwyn Baker.
Yeah, David just pretty much took the words out of my mouth. It's got to be looked at case by case. I mean, certainly I don't agree with privatising everything for the sake of privatising it, but there may be some instances where it's the better way to go, but until you sit down and look at that individual case and the pros and cons and everything, you've got no way of knowing. So neither for nor against. It's a case by case.
Marina Kozel.
You to repeat the question, please.
Sure. Do you support the privatisation of services or do you believe that the council will privatise services?
The only reason you privatise, in my mind, is if you're time poor to do it yourself. Now, if services for council are things that we all need in order to effectively run, I'd be not privatising. I'd be making sure that things are done smarter and done in a benchmark way, as per other councils. There's plenty of evidence out there to show how things are done in a better way. I don't see why we would need to privatise.
All right, Ken Dickens.
I find that an interesting question. That question I'd put to the ratepayers. If I said to the ratepayers, if we privatise this particular service and we can get the work done within a week as opposed to a month, what would the ratepayers say? The ratepayers say, I want to privatise and I want it done in a week. You know, the council is an interesting business, and that's what it is. It's a business. At the end of the day, it delivers services. And privatisation, and Anthony mentioned it before with Jeff Kennett's compulsory tendering. Some services for councils were privatised, others kept in-house because in-house bid. Right, and it's about the efficient delivery of services. Now, you talk about the cost of going to a pool, for example. $32 for a four-person family is ridiculous. But the question is, or the question I'd ask, what does the council do to preserve cash? Right, is there a better way of capitalising equipment, as an example, where council pays cash for every bit of rolling stock that it purchases? It doesn't lease, it doesn't finance. And therefore, the cash is going out, holus bolus, up front, without any consideration of capital management. Now, if you preserve cash, you can look at other ways of reducing the cost to the community rather than spending it up front and letting it flow out the door as it does at the minute.
Robert Blazcheck.
I think privatisation, there's two ways to go about it. There's the wrong way and the right way. I think from my previous experience as a board member for a non-for-profit, we did a really good job with student welfare and advocacy, and we kept that. But other bits and pieces like retail, we didn't, and we obviously brought in a private company to do that. I think coming back to the City of Greater Geelong, I think we need to really sit down and not rush the review of all our services and look at what is best for our community and what's best for the ratepayers. Because at the end of the day, it's every single community member who pays rates that is funding these services, and they probably would want to have the most say in regards to what happens and how it's presented and how it is delivered to our community. So is it right? Is it wrong? We're not too sure, but we definitely need to have a look into it.
Thank you very much. Our next question comes from someone who's directing their question to David Withington. They're in Lara, named Ted. But I'm going to ask it to David and then open it up to all of the other candidates to respond. They say, at a time of great upheaval with Ford and Alcoa closing, Geelong desperately needs councillors with experience in managing an economy in the process of change. Can you tell us what experience you have had in economic development and job creation? So, David, if you want to answer that.
Yes, certainly. Thanks, Ted, for that question. My experience in this area goes back some decades, and started when I was working for state government in the 1980s. We had a very difficult time towards the end of the 1980s and the early 90s when there was a severe recession and a lot of financial collapses, the state bank and pyramid in Victoria. I was part of a team that had to put together a strategy to try and overcome that particular problem, and that sort of kicked off my interest in this area. When I came to the work for the Geelong Council in the late 90s, Geelong was still in a pretty gloomy state after the collapse of Pyramid earlier in the decade. Marina mentioned the expression before, low self-esteem in the northern suburbs. There was low self-esteem right across Geelong. There was a collapse of confidence in the city. As marketing manager at the council, I led and introduced a extremely diverse and strong campaign called Geelong Smart Move, which actually played a critical role in starting to turn around people's pride and confidence in Geelong and started to build the profile of Geelong outside Geelong. And out of that, we started to see some population growth, some economic development start to occur. And I've run a number of campaigns of that type. I'd like to see something like that done in the north of Geelong to start to build the self-esteem of the north of Geelong, to build trust and confidence, and to start but focus particularly on the north, and not necessarily the whole of Geelong.
Thank you, David. Ken Dickens.
Without doubt, the spine, the industrial spine of Geelong runs from Avalon down to Geelong Port, Viva, Heels Road Precinct, the council, whoever they may be, must as a priority support in any way they can the future development of those businesses. I don't think we've done terribly well in attracting businesses that employ a lot of people. There's other competing interests. You know, there's other states that chase down businesses, and Geelong has to just sell the benefits of the port, of the airport, close, you know, proximity to Melbourne. It needs a significant effort to get more business along that industrial spine.
Anthony Aitken.
Thank you. Look, governments don't create jobs. We live in a capitalist society. Businesses create jobs. And the problem that we have in Geelong is that we don't have a focus on creating employment opportunities for people with low skills and semi-skilled. And that's actually where the thousands of jobs that have been lost in the Geelong region. What we've become very good on in the last 5 to 6 years is attracting the shifting of jobs. And we've shifted jobs from Melbourne with the WorkSafe and TACC. And we potentially are shifting jobs from the Canberra with Comcare and also with the establishment of the NDIS. What we do need is a cohesive plan between the state and federal government and the local council to actually attract more investment in Geelong, which actually creates opportunities for low and semi-skilled employment. And that is actually one of the most important issues that the council needs to undertake in its economic development focus. The other part of the question was actually what experience have you had yourself? And one of the best examples I can give to you listeners is I was actually had the privilege of representing the council on the Steam Packet Development Board. And that board was given money, matched dollar for dollar by the Geelong community with Jeff Kennett to actually redevelop the waterfront. Now, I sat on that board, went through every investor briefing and went through every infrastructure project that actually was undertaken. And I'm proud to say that that was one of the best projects that's ever been undertaken in the Geelong region for the last 25 years. The waterfront is a perfect example of what can be achieved with governments and the private sector working together, and I'm happy to say that I was a member of that particular board.
Bronwyn Baker.
I haven't really got an answer for this one. I haven't got the sort of experience that the guys are talking about. I do have a long history in the financial services industry before going into the work I'm in now. But don't forget also that council does have employees specialised in the marketing and the financial management. It's more a councillor's role I see as being communicating, being an advocate for the community and working with the other professionals and other areas outside of council that do have that expertise.
Marina Kozel.
There's a lot to say here. It's very loaded. I started off today by saying that I'm here to give back and the next sentence that I'm going to say is that I left Geelong. I left Geelong so that I could see the world and so that I could bring the best back to Geelong. Now, when we talk about Ford and when we talk about Alcoa, we're talking about original equipment manufacturing and we're talking about primary suppliers. And in the food chain, and if I use the analogy of an engine, there are parts in an engine and all those parts work together. If a part breaks, you replace it. If we go back to the analogy of the businesses, so if we understand what an original equipment manufacturer or primary supplier is, there are tier one suppliers, tier two suppliers, and the list goes on. So we feed into what's actually happening in the region. My experience is on major projects. From a very young age, I've been working on not only residential and small scale three bedrooms. I think the largest project that I worked on was in Darling Harbour Live in Sydney, working on the convention exhibition and theatre development there, which is obviously a multi-billion dollar lend-lease development. From there, I've also worked on stadiums and entire sports precincts as large as the MCG. From there, I've worked on entire hospital redevelopments, such as in Rockhampton, another area that's also quite remote, similar in size. What I can bring to the table is vision. My whole life is based on forward visioning what a city could look like. The other part of my world is involved in how am I going to get the ingredients together to build that vision? That's the building part. So what I bring to the table is an absolute recipe. I know what needs to happen from an age and demographic point of view. I know how to draw it on paper and I know how to communicate it on plan. I see Geelong as a kit of parts and those parts must work together and they have to work together in the right order. There is an ability for lower tier suppliers to obviously climb up the ranks, but we have to get the levels sorted.
Thank you, and Robert Blazcheck.
That's a tough question, and I think many will struggle to answer that. But taking it back to the clever and creative future, I think some of our city's aspirations are to create a prosperous economy that supports jobs and education, a leader in developing and adopting technology, and a destination that attracts local and international visitors. So I think we need to look at that, right? So my father worked at Ford's. My brother worked for a metal fabricator, right? Ford's closed down. Dad no longer works. My brother's had to move to Melbourne for work, right? I love that we've got TAC, Comcare potentially coming down and all those, you know, government organisations. But what about your blue-collar, hard-working residents of Norlane, Corio and Lara, right? So we need to continue supporting local businesses who employ local residents, those businesses. And that's where I'd want to lobby both state and federal and actual private enterprises to come down and come and see our suburbs and see that we have a workforce ready to work. Just give them the work to do. I also would want to investigate and look into creating a business hub in the northern suburbs. I meet young people all the time who have great ideas, but they don't know where to go. They don't have access to leaders of industries. They don't have access to mentors. So I think we need to look into it down three different ways. The government organisations coming into Geelong, brilliant. Looking at another stream of work, being for, you know, those people who work with their hands, who are passionate about what they do. I think a business hub is essential for us as well down in the northern suburbs. And supporting the locals is the number one thing we should be doing and lobbying for.
Thank you very much. It's 6 minutes to midday on 94.7 The Pulse. You're listening to our Windermere Candidates Forum. And just a reminder to everyone here that The Pulse is kicking off its subscribe-a-thon period. We're encouraging people to subscribe, to show their support to this radio station so that we can continue to run forums like this in the future. So if you would like to subscribe to The Pulse, make sure that you speak to someone from The Pulse team on the way out. Yeah. Oh, fantastic. I like that you're paying in cash as well, straight to me. No, I won't say that. Our next question comes from Marcus, and he says, the former mayor generated a lot of interest in the council using social media and engaged more young people in council business. Was this a useful strategy, and will you try to do this if elected? What methods of communication will you use to promote open and transparent government? And Marina Kozel is up first.
Social media is fundamental. Like I said, two things that are very important, not just for me but for a lot of people, are information. If we know what's going on, we can respond accordingly. Twitter is very powerful. It's also very concise, and that's what we need. We need conciseness, we need to know where to go, and we need to know who's saying it.
Robert Blazcheck.
I think all forms of communication is important. I've come across residents who don't have access to Facebook, and then I've come across residents who do have access to Facebook. My dad's 63 and he's just learning how to use Facebook. So I think it's important to get your message across, but absolutely, I think there is a growing population who do use social media, who do look for information, do look for updates, and they want those updates immediately. People aren't waiting for a letter to be sent out to their mail. They want to know what's happened down the road, and I see it with all those Facebook groups, with breaking news and whatnot. So I think we as a council and as all potential candidates should look into a strong social media presence for the council.
Ken Dickens?
Anthony Aiken knows I'm a big user of Twitter. I love it. Love the platform. Love Facebook. I think transparency is going to be the big ticket item of the next council. And I think we need to be open and honest in our deliberations and say it how it is. So in my case, Ken Diggins' case, certainly, social media is important.
Bronwyn Baker?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if we don't embrace social media, we're just getting left behind. That would be crazy. There's always going to be a place for, you know, your Geelong Advertiser and your written communication and, of course, radio. But, yeah, social media is absolutely huge. And once again, council does have a whole, you know, a department of people that's sort of expert in these areas that, you know, that would be supporting us through that as well. We don't have to individually as councillors know how to put everything out there on Facebook. But, yeah, we have a department that does that.
Anthony Aiken.
Thanks, Mitchell. Look, social media is one component of how you actually engage with your community. Some interesting things came out of the citizens' jury. They actually said council meetings should be broadcast live, and I'm pleased to see the administrators have actually adopted that process. So they haven't done it for themselves, but they're implementing it for the new elected council that's coming on board. The council can also hold public meetings outside of the CBD of Geelong, and I encourage that we should improve that number that actually is occurring in that regard. But importantly, open and transparency will be something that the new council has to undertake, because the community is demanding more information than ever about how their money is actually being spent and how decision-making is actually being undertaken. So the council is going to have to be prepared that everything they do is going to be scrutinised by the community. And if it means social media, public meetings, forums such as this, and more engagement with the Pulse, well, that's actually what the council needs to do, because the councillors effectively are all communicators about how the $400 million budget is actually being spent and being dispersed throughout the community.
Thank you. David Withington.
I think it's quite ironic that I should be last to answer this question. I'm a bit of a social media Neanderthal. It actually took me to retire from work and decide to run for council before I had to go through the painful task of familiarising myself with Facebook. I haven't got as far as Twitter as yet. Of course, social media is going to be part of the communication mix going forward. I know that as a communication professional, and it will be an important part. But I've got to disagree with a few of the comments, particularly what Marina said. I actually am a bit concerned when I see things simplified as much as they are on Twitter, particularly when it's the President of the United States talking about sending rockets into North Korea. So I think there's some danger in over-relying on social media. The things I'm more interested in, which go to the heart of the question, is how to achieve greater transparency at council, and that's something that I'll be very strong about, starting with setting up some sort of advisory network in the ward with my fellow councillor, whoever that may be that's elected, so that we can have regular contact with the various people in the ward, the various interest groups in the ward, the various organisations in the ward, make sure that we stay in touch right through to initiatives such as the one Anthony mentioned, where the council meetings are now being broadcast. It is absolutely essential, if we're to get trust and confidence back in the council, that we're open and transparent in our decision-making, that we make evidence-based decisions, and that people can understand the factors that have gone into our decisions. And social media will be a part of that, but it's far from a panacea.
Just sort of going back to services, I think we've sort of already answered this question, but I'll pose it again directly. Do you agree with the introduction of hard waste collection in Geelong? Robert Blazcheck.
Simply put, yes.
David Withington?
Absolutely, and it's mystifying why Geelong has not been able to solve this problem. Surely they must have been getting the feedback that we've been getting on the campaign trail from people, and that is that they see this as a basic service. It is not a solution to have to spend $25 or more taking stuff down to the resource recovery centre on an ad hoc basis. Council has a definite role in providing some sort of organised service. There are various ways they could look at doing this. It doesn't necessarily have to be the traditional way of doing it. Probably don't want to bore people by going through what those options are now, but some form of hard waste collection will happen in the next council. I feel certain of that.
Ken Dickens.
I have to register a conflict of interest here. What David said is true. There's more than one way of skinning the hard waste problem, or skinning the cat, so to speak. I'm an absolute supporter of it. I think it's not good enough. What the issues that are prevalent where there aren't any hard waste collections are illegal dumping in parks and in bushland. It needs to be done, and the sooner it's done, the better.
Thank you. Bronwyn Baker.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I had horses that I was keeping out at Maud up until fairly recently, and I used to drive up and down the Stiglitz Road fairly regularly, and every time you drive up there, there would be a new lot of hard rubbish dumped there, mattresses, TVs, tyres. We could avoid all that by just having a hard rubbish collection of one form or another.
So. And Marina Kozel?
Yeah, absolutely. Hard rubbish is a very simple and normal service in many other councils, and people need help to remove larger items. It's actually a very positive effect that happens on Hard Rubbish Day. When I lived in Brisbane for 7 years, it would be an absolute field day for someone with a trailer to be rocking up and taking all the good bits and pieces that someone else discarded. Someone else's trash is someone else's treasure, and that's... It's what will happen here as well. What it'll promote is it'll promote a lot of communication and friendliness and people stepping out of their homes and onto their streets and sticky beaking. What's wrong with sticky beaking and saying, hey, what do you got there? You know, it's actually a very positive service. People need help to take care of their crap.
Anthony Aiken.
I don't understand why we don't have a hard waste either. And when you talk to the people of Lara, Little River and Anarchy, they actually go, just across the river is the city of Wyndham. And the city of Wyndham has a hard waste collection system. And they keep getting told by the city of Greater Geelong, costs too much. Well, let's have a look at the city of Wyndham's program. They actually don't just do it once, they do it twice. You actually book for them to come and collect your hard waste system, and you get the opportunity to book it twice. It's an essential service. It should be undertaken, and the Wyndham model is something that Geelong should follow. An example of where we can find the money to actually do that, under the administrators, under the first 12 months of their reign, consultancies increased by 52% to $5 million. So that's a couple of million dollars that could be spent on a hard waste collection system. So if anybody tells you there isn't money in the city of Greater Geelong to pay for a hard waste collection system, they're not telling you the truth, because what they're doing, they're saying it's not a priority. But I can assure you, every single candidate that's actually been out in the north has been told about the city of Wyndham system, and also been told that we want a hard waste collection system. And I hope the council administration is listening.
Got a question from Brad. He says, what is the first thing on your priority list to achieve if elected? Anthony Aitken, you're up first now.
We've just touched on it. The first one is, let's look at a hard waste collection system. The community wants it. The councillors and candidates seem to say they all want it as well too. Well, let's find the money to actually do that.
Bronwyn Baker.
Well, I have to go back to my Animal Justice Party roots here. I want to see some money go back into the Geelong Animal Welfare Service. Pet owners pay $6 million a year in pet registration fees. It's only fair to expect that some of that goes into supporting the service that's there to support our pets when they are lost or displaced.
Marina Kozel.
The first thing I'm going to do is try to make small improvements across all of the 9 points that I've listed. Without taking up time now, I'd like to spend a bit more time wrapping up towards the end. But lots of small improvements will add up to an aggregate and larger effect.
David Withington.
Well, first priority for me, it might be a bit more boring, but well, actually to get a functioning council up and running. That'll be the first big challenge for all of us that are elected. That's going to take a lot of skill, a lot of tough talk and a lot of effort. And until we get that in place, really, we're just dreaming about the rest of it. But if you wanted me to pick one thing, there will be a hard waste collection in 2018.
Ken Dickens.
I agree with David in relation to the council, but my priority is going to be infrastructure, unashamed, unabashed. The Northern Medical Centre and the Northern Arc, it, for me, is an absolute number one priority.
Robert Blaszczyk.
I think my main point will be pursuing community development. I think investing in vital services is needed to service a growing population, and that's looking at the Northern Arc, the hospital, the health hub, you know, looking at all our community and making sure they got the best of the best.
Fantastic. This is a question from Lee. He says, over the years, or it might be a she, we have seen many councillors run for state and federal politics while still being in council. It feels like local government is being used as a stepping stone. Do you rule out running for state or federal politics during your term if elected? And we'll shuffle that around. And David Withington.
Oh, that's an easy one for me. I think I've missed my run there. As I said before, I'm in my late 60s. Now, I've retired from work in order to take on this very difficult challenge of making this Geelong Council successful. So that's my one and only focus, and I'll leave state and federal politics to others.
Robert Blaszczyk?
No, I'm not going to be running for any state or federal because I care about my community. I'm going to work and lobby for my community.
Anthony Aitken?
Look, I've been asked this question since I was 21 years of age, and I'm still not run for state or federal politics. I love local government. I care about the community that I've represented in the past. I care that the community haven't been represented for the last 16 years while I haven't been on council, and I want to get back in and be the best council I can for the North.
Marina Kozel.
I'm definitely not going to run any higher. With my background, I can see how important grassroots improvements everywhere are to the local community. I want to definitely give back to where we are here, especially to the Windermere Ward initially. But as they say, if you want to go fast, go alone, but if you want to go far, go together. So I'm here for the local government, and I'm definitely not going any higher. I love the grassroots too much.
Bronwyn Baker.
Yeah, I'll rule that out. If I'm elected, I definitely won't be campaigning for anything else. This is hard enough work, hey, guys?
And Ken Dickens. This is a question from Colleen. She says, this is going back to the point about services again, a number of candidates have promised, this is not necessarily in this forum, just in general, a number of candidates have promised more services and cuts to rates at the same time. To each candidate, would you like to see more services and lower rates? And if so, what is the main area where you would cut spending to achieve this? David Withington.
Well, I'd love to achieve a magic pudding, but it's just not achievable. As we've talked so often about today, the North has been disadvantaged for a long time. It needs more investment in the North to give it a fair go. We're not going to get that by cutting everyone else's rates as a priority. Of course, we want to keep rates as low as possible, but council has to deliver the key functions that it's there to deliver. I just can't see for the life of me how people can promise, on the one hand, they're going to lower rates, and on the other hand, they're going to improve services. You can do services more efficiently. I know you can talk about that as much as you like. You can certainly save money by doing services more efficiently. But if you do save money, invest that money in the North. That would be a much better way to use it than cutting other people's rates. I've heard nowhere that level of rates is in any way a problem for Geelong. I know the Chamber of Commerce have got an issue with one particular part of the rating system, the commercial rates, and there may be some merit in their argument, but overall there is no evidence that the level of rates in Geelong is out of whack with anywhere else or in any way holding back this city.
Ken Dickens.
Well, I think the best step forward the future council can make is benchmark. Find best practice, copy it, look at it, touch it, feel it. Look at ways to preserve cash. You look at the balance sheet of the city of Greater Geelong. It's got $2.2 billion in equity. That includes infrastructure and everything else that makes up the council. So it really is there is an opportunity to get this right, and by getting it right is getting a fully functional council that. You know, not everybody's going to agree with one another because, you know, the nature of the beast is that each ward is going to have either two or three councillors that are committed to their particular ward. But we have to look at the big picture as well. And I think, you know, the real potential is to get a fully functional council that delivers services in that meet the requirements of the community. And once we do that, then we can do all the other pretty stuff. Until that's done, until we have a fully functioning council, we're not going anywhere.
Anthony Aitken.
Look, I actually support the state government's statewide initiative with capping of rates because it actually makes council administration, when they set their budgets each year, in a framework of toughness and also in a framework of restricting just an ambit expenditure program that they have every year. And look, all surveys that have been conducted of the community make it quite clear. They say people would rather pay more rates if it actually meant better services. But what does happen in Geelong, unfortunately, is that the extra additional income that's been generated for rates isn't going to those basic services. It's actually going to $100 million new headquarters for the city of Greater Geelong. And that's what's actually wrong. The priority of where that money that is generated from rates should go back to basics. And that's the clear message that the community has given us during this election campaign. And it's something that has to come out in the budgets for the next 3 to 4 years, where the council says we are committed towards back to basics. And that means a commitment towards services. The level of potholes that the community is complaining about and see isn't something that they're making up. It's actually there. And the only way that council is going to be able to address those is to channel more funds towards that particular area and service. And that needs to occur. In terms of rates, David did mention that he didn't have an example of where rates were higher in Geelong than they are elsewhere. David, I had Westfield Shopping Centre, and for over 8 years, our rates were double what they were at Westfield Doncaster. And Westfield actually even lodged a valuation complaint with the City of Greater Geelong to actually say that their rates were significantly higher than what they were in Doncaster. So there's something wrong in that magic pudding that we need to have a look at to work out why is that the case.
Robert Blazchek.
I think when it comes to rates, each person's going to be divided in that one, because I think every resident who pays rates believes that their needs and wants are more important than anybody else. But unfortunately, we're all rate payers. I am myself. And we need to look into making sure that, like the other candidates have mentioned today, back to basics. Look at other successful, well-run councils. We heard Wyndham, we've heard Brisbane, I've travelled the world myself and I've seen other European cities run a lot better. I think we need to take it back. I don't say cut services. I think we need to look at our essential services. I think we need to structure the way we spend our money a lot better. And I think we need to start looking after the community a lot better.
Bronwyn Baker.
Anyone who's saying lower rates and better services obviously is dreaming. It just doesn't add up. That's it. Tell him he's dreaming. I agree with Anthony's comments a lot about that perhaps the redistribution of where those rates go needs to be looked at. Ted, how much is that building? That's massive. You can't lower rates and improve services, and I think the better services are more important. There's also a huge contingent of people and probably the most disadvantaged people that don't pay rates, and they're the people that we most need to look after. So lowering rates isn't going to help our most needy citizens.
Marina Kozel.
So definitely I think that the word rates sort of masks the real meaning behind it, which is common resources and common money. And the way to look at something common is to really look at how it's being distributed. The services need to remain and the common money needs to be used much better. The building and infrastructure that's the background to our city, that all needs to be better used. When I look at it, I see a lot of dead spaces. When I look at the fact that, imagine there was a gas shortage and that people's cars weren't available to them. Forget about the most disadvantaged people in the community. We'd all be very stuck. So what we also need to look at is how do people interchange in the community when the worst does happen to them? How do you actually get to Geelong or how do you get to Windermere? The other thing is that's important with that kind of approach and looking at how the common money and the common resources are spent is informing one another. So the services all can become a lot more intelligent. When we look at social media and we look at the rapid-fire information exchange that can happen across that, I actually find that my social media is more informative than the television news. So when we look at services, everything can become much more intelligent, and the common money, or the rates as we call them, they can all be distributed far better. We need to be more resourceful. Geelong has a fantastic background in terms of trade and in terms of what people can do with their hands and with their hearts and with their minds. And in engaging back with those essential parts of ourselves, I think it's going to be a no-brainer once we do look at the benchmarks and redistribute people and the common money, the rates, properly.
Thank you very much. Well, I can say that you guys are definitely a lot more succinct than the Bellarine candidates, but unfortunately there's still questions that we haven't been able to get to that were submitted, but that's the way it goes, unfortunately. What we'll do now is move to candidates' closing statements. You'll again have 2 minutes where you can clear up any disagreements with another candidate or just restate why people should vote for you or talk about the important issues for you. Listed first is Anthony Aitken.
Okay, thank you. Look, first, I don't envy the role of the voters out in the north, because this is actually the strongest collection of candidates that are actually standing in any of the wards. Every single one of us that you've heard this morning, and a couple of the candidates who weren't able to be here this morning, including Mushtag and Kylie, all could represent the north very, very well. The decision that you've got as the voters is to actually pick the best two that will deliver results for you in the council. And I want to emphasise that the most important areas are the skills and experiences of those particular councillors. And I actually believe that I have skills and experiences that can deliver results for you as the voter. That includes financial skills. That includes management skills. That includes governance. That includes advocacy. And it also includes community leadership. So when you look at the candidates for standing, go through all those skills and experiences and actually pick the two candidates that meet all those requirements. I believe I do have the ability and experience and the skills to meet all those areas that I've just mentioned to you. What I add to that is I have passion, I care about the community at which I represent, and I actually do love the North. I'm actually proud to say I was born in the North and I've lived in the North, and I'm going to look after the North for the future if I'm elected again as a councillor.
Thank you. Ken Dickens.
During my travels around the North, excuse me, which included Labuan Square, where some of the issues there were more about lighting and safety, especially for women employees in the evening at night. Northern Futures, Cloverdale, Community Centre. People that do really good work, as I mentioned before, with little fanfare and very little support. I find there's an enormous amount of work being done in the North that do the North proud. And I would also say that, and the message I've been getting is that 98% of the people that live in the North are house proud, working with a part-time or not. But the overall issue that needs to be addressed is connectivity. You know, I spoke with people in Lara and they were quite articulate, quite passionate and understand exactly what it is they need, but they still get nothing. It's a slog for them, you know, whether it's the safe seat situation in the North that's never delivered the types of capital spending that we're seeing in the South with Coringamite and, South Barwon. The key here is advocacy. It's understanding what the community needs and having somebody to deliver it. And I think I'm quite capable of that. Having run a business in Geelong for 22 years, a successful business, I know what success looks like and I understand what outcomes look like. And I think that I'm in a unique position to be able to help the North achieve both.
David Withington.
Thanks, Mitchell. Well, the council needs a fresh start, and it's a big challenge. We need to get a functioning council established first. I'll provide strong professional representation and good governance that will be essential in that process. And then we need to get back to basics. We need to build trust and confidence in the council again by improving essential services. It's going to be a tough job. We certainly need fresh faces, but we, as Anthony Aitken said, above all need skills and experience that are going to make this possible. I'm worried about the fact that there are a number of former councillors standing in this election, fortunately not in Windermere Ward, because I'm worried that if some of those people get elected, that they may bring some baggage from the past and some party political history and some poisonous relationships, which will make the job even harder. So my main plea to the voters is please look to fresh candidates so that this council can get a fresh start. It's an unusual situation that we're in, coming in after a period of administration, and after we've had two extremely popular mayors attempt the job, both coming from their own businesses, and unfortunately, very different people, but for different reasons, both failing to succeed. Geelong simply cannot afford another failed council. We need people with the right skills and experience that are going to also introduce fresh blood and make sure that the new council is successful.
Robert Blazchek.
Thank you, Mitchell. I grew up experiencing the northern suburbs in all its prosperity and glory. It's a strong community mindset. Numerous influential sporting clubs, successful small businesses are all part of what gives the North its rich and vibrant culture. I'm honoured to call myself a son of the North, and I wish to showcase our proud community by standing for the upcoming council election. I'm standing for the Windermere Ward because we need a strong voice of advocacy and because we as a community deserve better. My key areas of interest are youth engagement, local businesses, community safety, improving our profile, and open spaces, leisure and well-being. My commitment to every single member of the Windermere Ward is I will listen, engage and consult. I will put residents before developers, direct resources towards the highest priority of our community, increase access to council services, invest in park upgrades and more open spaces, improve council infrastructure and services, and be open and transparent. It's time to elect a new generation of leaders for our council. And I believe that with my experience and my strong connection to the community, that I am the best candidate to represent the northern suburbs in the upcoming council elections. I wish to reach out to members of the Windermere Ward to please consider me as their chosen candidate and place their trust in me to deliver for our community. Thank you.
Marina Kozel.
So in bringing world-class standards to Geelong, I have to draw on where I've come from and where I've lived. Essentially, Lara, Port Melbourne, Brisbane City, Logan City, and then most recently, East Bentley in Melbourne. These places have opened my eyes and they've shown me what is a basic and what could be exemplary for how we live here in Geelong. I'm agile and fearless enough to take on all the challenges and weaknesses and convert that muck into brass. I'm resourceful to work with what I have and find what I need. I'm a time, deal and dollars type of person. I trust, action and progress all of the important, forgotten tasks. I have invaluable foresight and I'm a very strong contributor. Aside from getting the basic roads, rubbish and rates happening, I have these 9 goals to start with, which are completely complementary to the Clever and Creative Cities book. The level crossing removals, the lobbying that needs to happen in Windermere is a no-brainer. We need to separate the bad intersections between people, cars and rail. We have to give life skills. What we have are an incredible posse of people with skills in arts, sports and social and community groups. We need to help the youth, the adults and the seniors develop the skills to deal with stress and look very squarely at the drug and the alcohol addiction problem that we have here. I link it a lot to poverty and to obviously starvation and malnutrition. When you can't think straight, you can't live straight. We need to make better use of our buildings, so better days with better buildings. This includes gaining Wi-Fi on trains, which is also a very simple and common thing in other parts of the world. We need to prevent isolation, things like playgroups in aged care facilities. It's a rolling program in Australia where mealtime and playtime is one and the same between the elderly and the very, very young. We need to promote Windermere's environment and a healthy country lifestyle. We need the bike network so that we can commute with something other than cars. We also need that missing level of density so that we get transport-orientated developments. This then feeds into activating our town centres, which are very quiet, and footsteps would be nice.
Thank you very much. And Bronwyn Baker.
I'll be really brief. As Anthony pointed out, I think anyone on the panel here today would be a successful councillor. It'll be a really exciting time to be on council. We've got a lot of change ahead of us and a lot of very hard work. What we need is, you know, a group of people that are prepared to work as a team and to a plans in place. You just need the right people to deliver it. Through this time of change, I guess if you want to, you want to remember that you need to have someone there that's got some genuine care and compassion for the people and for the animals and for the environment, so that all this change happens with a, you know, on a basis of compassion, equality, justice for everybody.
Thank you very much. And to those in the audience, please thank our candidates. Now, I'd ask that everyone please follow Anthony's lead and subscribe to The Pulse. That man behind the panel is one person that you can see or go to reception. And also, when you're subscribing, you can nominate your favourite show on The Pulse and subscribe specifically to that program. Thank you. I may be biased, but Mitchell's Front Page is the one that you want to subscribe to. I'd just like to thank the entire Pulse team for helping us to put this forum together, for working the panel and the buttons. So thank you very much, in no particular order, to Justin, Leo, Nathan, Simon, Courtney in the studio, and later Robert, and of course, most importantly, Liam on the bell, who never misses the opportunity to ring the bell and keep everyone on track. So can we have a round of applause for those people? The forum will be podcast at mitchellsfrontpage.com, and you can go onto that website and click on the 2017 Geelong elections for a comprehensive guide and our election calculator. So go there, have a look, have a listen to our candidate interviews, and we look forward to coming back next week to do it all again with our Brownbill and Cadinia forums. That's it for now. Thank you very much.